Welcome to Making Sense, the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee, supported by our lovely friends at KiwiBank. I'm Frances Cook. I'm an independent financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Now, getting a house and paying it off, biggest financial decision many people will make, and the amount you pay on the mortgage, huge part of that. Here's the thing though, you could be paying more on your mortgage simply because you don't know the tricks that get you a lower rate. There are advertised rates, and then there's the rate the bank could offer if you just knew what to ask. There's also the possibility of a few little sweeteners they could throw in, which never hurts. But again, you often have to ask. So, time to hit someone up who's made a business out of helping people figure this one out. After he had his own experience of realizing his friends were getting a better deal just because they knew the right ways to negotiate.
Making Sense is on a mission to make money simple, and I just couldn't do that without the support of KiwiBank. It's really important to me to only work with companies that understand that mission and the difference it makes when you understand the money world. For KiwiBank, their purpose is to help Kiwi and Aotearoa be better off. So bringing you real stories of inspirational and unconventional approaches to finance is one of the ways they're making a real difference to the lives of their customers. This is Making Kiwi Better Off. This is Kiwi.
I'm joined now by Jackson Harpetter. You are an entrepreneur, currently the co-founder of Lender, but you have quite a bit of business experience, and I want to go right back to the beginning on that because you had a taste for business right from when you were really small. Run me through some of your business schemes.
My business experience goes way back to a beautiful place, which some people might know the name of, Levin, which is an hour north of Wellington.
My first ever boyfriend came from Levin, so a real soft spot in my heart for 13-year-old Frances there.
I hope you're okay.
Yeah, well, I did have bad taste, I will say. But, you know, soft spot for Levin. Please continue.
And there were lots of market gardeners in Levin, and there still is. They supply most of the lettuce and broccoli and cabbage for most of the country still. And I was inspired by that as a young kid when I was about 4 or 5. And I decided that what I was going to do is empty all the cupboards in my parents' house and empty all the fresh produce while they were busy, you know, mowing the lawns out the back. And I went and put it on my front lawn on the fence facing the street and put prices on everything. And that was my first business. I decided I'm going to sell everything. If all these market gardeners around me can sell fresh produce, then surely I can resell the fresh produce that my parents have bought, including some 2-minute noodles and Raro, you know, all those 90s classics. So that was the first venture that I started.
How did your parents react to that? I feel like I'd be so divided as a parent. I'd be like, well done on your entrepreneurial spirit, yay. But also, as a kid, I'm not sure if you would have had the right pricing structure for starters. Secondly, on that one, I'm sort of like, and now what are we going to have for dinner?
I think there was two problems. I think my pricing was probably too unrealistic and I aimed high, you know, because you're not going to sell anything, right? I think maybe I got a couple of people walked by who thought it was really cute and bought a couple of things after a bit of hustling down of the price. But you think of big numbers when you're a kid, you know, the first one you know is $100. So a pumpkin for $100 is not really going to sell in the suburban streets of Levin that well.
I like your ambition, though.
No, we had a bit of an ant problem as well. I think that was the issue. So I think some of the food got attacked by ants. So it was an expensive week for my family. But I don't remember them being all that upset about it. I think they probably found it a little bit funny.
What do you think gave you the bug that early that you're just chilling at home, you're a kid, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to earn some cash. Was this a conversation that was happening in your family or something you'd seen from elsewhere? What gave you the bug here? I love it.
Yeah, I don't come from a lot of business owners as such. I come from a very hardworking family who lots of people work in healthcare in my family, social services, so quite different from my background. But my grandparents massively instilled the value of money into me, you know, that you really need to work if you want to get ahead, because no one else is going to give it to you. And especially coming from a place like Levin, you know, it's not exactly Remuera. It's quite low socio, if you will. So you have to work hard to get ahead. There's not a lot of jobs out there. You got to put yourself out there a little bit. So I knew the value of working hard quite young. I knew the value of property quite young from my grandparents. But I guess just seeing, I think growing up, so I was a 90s kid. There was a lot more cash moving around. And, you know, when you're a kid, you play shops and customers or whatever you call it. And I think just that buzz of money over counter probably excited me. Not sure why. It's pretty weird for a four-year-old, but but there was a lot of that around me, especially in the market garden scene of Levin. I just thought it was really cool that people can make things or grow things and then they get paid for it and they can go and spend that money on whatever they want. And as a kid, you just think, you know, that's toys. That's a whole, that pumpkin is a toy. But in reality, when you're an adult, it's that pumpkin is a power bill.
And you did also, as you got a bit older, you still at a young age, but old enough to actually be creating something a bit more real this time, not 2 minute noodles for $100. So you got into some more legitimate businesses later. Tell me about when you started to make those and what you tried out and tested as you got older.
Yeah, so when I got older, obviously most kids who kind of have a remote interest in business and want to have a bit of fun, I got into Young Enterprise Scheme at school, which taught me a lot about the realities of business and how you should price things. And through Young Enterprise Scheme at school, I don't know if you did it, but you actually make a product. Hopefully, we made scarves in winter and sold oodles of them. And I think that really got the business bug and entrepreneur bug going in me. As an adult, getting into the business world, because I went out to work, you know, my grandparents told me, you got to get out. You got to get out of Levin and you got to go and work. So I did that rather early on. But I had a side hustle, which was a website. It was a recipe website, which was, I think, through that phase of Instagram growth and everyone wanting to learn how to make their own things through that period of time. And when taking photos of your lunch was cool, you know, now it's just kind of a bit weird when you see that on social media now. But it was during that period where everyone was, I would say 50% of content online was people's food, which now I say it out loud is really weird.
I remember that the classic, you know, you'd go out to meet people and you'd have to pause while everyone got their phone up here and took a snapshot of their food. And like you had to wait a good 5 minutes while everyone took that picture and tried to get it perfectly flat. It was so weird. Weird time.
Yeah. Wait. I need this really yellow sepia filter on it.
Yes, very. All the photos were very yellow.
So I kind of thought, oh, well, people want to know about hospitality and making food, and people are getting more creative with, you know, we've come a long way in Aotearoa, New Zealand, from eating corned beef and roasts. You know, there's lots of different variety of things. I think it was when kombucha was had kicked off. It was around that time. So one of my first ideas was to build a recipe website to teach people how to make, you know, these kind of niche foods at home and take photos of it and all that wonderful stuff. And one of the first things was teaching people how to make kombucha, which I wouldn't remember how to make now.
I've tried. I'm really bad. I made vinegar many times. I've never made kombucha.
It's pretty much, you can pretty much blow up your pantry and again, have to replace your whole pantry like my parents did when I was a kid. But that was one of the first things that I did. So I could make things. I was taught how to cook when I was growing up. And it was fun. It was fun taking photos. It looked cool, but it really made no money. It was a business that I didn't think about how to make money, even though Young Enterprise Scheme taught me how to make money and selling my parents' pantry taught me how to make money. That was kind of my first business where I was like, this is my passion. I'm going to build a business around this. But I guess I didn't think it through.
You forgot the monetization part, which turns it from hobby to actual business.
Yeah. So it never offered me the financial freedom of leaving the corporate life, but it was a fun thing to do, and it taught me a lot, you know, about branding, about how difficult it was back then to make a website, how important your social media presence is. Because a lot of people go and make websites, and it still happens, and I work with businesses that do, and they think, I'm going to make this website. And everyone's just going to accidentally find it.
Yeah.
But the reality is people don't just accidentally find your website. You have to get it out there. You have to go and show people and display it and demo it. So that venture didn't go too well. But you have to – I think people should talk about their failures, because there won't be anyone out there who's done well who hasn't failed fast. You just have to do it. And if you don't know, then you should be worried, because you've probably failed and not noticed somewhere along the line.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. I've heard people talk about that before, where they say if you're looking at someone and you think they're a huge success and they've only ever been a success, then you definitely just don't know part of their story. Because even people who come out of nowhere and are really successful, that's usually the third or fourth thing they've tried. I think what you're saying there about acknowledging the failures more is so important, because I feel like the road to success is always paved with failure. It's surviving those failures, for starters, and then learning how to build on them, figure out the lessons from them, and moving on to the success. I mean, I've been very lucky to talk to quite a few successful business people on this podcast or in various other parts of my journalism career. And you often look at them and you think, this person came out of nowhere, amazing idea, boom, there it was. Like, how did they do it? Just successful from the start. And anytime I've thought that about someone, I have been so wrong, because they have usually had these other things that they've tried beforehand that just went nowhere, did nothing. Of course, it got no attention because, oh, it failed. And so I think it is really important to talk about, you learn and you build on all of those failures, and then you have, hopefully, the thing that you do that is the right one, that is the thing that does really well. I mean, would you categorize that previous, the DIY, the cooking, as sort of a business that went wrong? Like, what would you categorize as like your biggest failure? Can we put it that way?
It sucked out a lot of money. It sucked out a lot of money. It's pretty much just funded, you know, through working. But it was really fun. It did, you know, it had potential. It was right at the right time to launch a business like that. But just sometimes you just don't think of, how am I actually going to make money? And I think a lot of people don't think about that. They just want to leave their job and go and do their passion. After doing that, I think I learned, after writing recipes every single night after work, I learned that it probably wasn't my passion. And with AI, you know, like, you wouldn't even need a website like that anymore. It was a failure of a business, but you have to have them. And I think we need to embrace failure. We don't do it well in this country. I think part of the issue that people don't speak about failure is probably because they get judged. Yeah. Our culture doesn't support failure. Like, the Americans, they just embrace that. You know, they even VCs over in the US are like, yeah, some things are just not going to work out. Some things that we invest in won't work out, and that's just life. And we just want people to get back on the horse and do something new. In our culture and our tall poppy syndrome society that we live in, people don't want to talk about their failures. They only ever want to talk about the good things. And social media shows us that. But if we get that right, geez, lots of people will be talking about failures. And then it's easier for people to give it a shot.
Absolutely. Just give it a crack. And if it fails, learn the lesson and give a different thing a crack, or try it again in a slightly different way. Why not? I mean, you obviously have now landed at a point where you're now running quite a successful business. You have obviously built on those. I don't even like using the word failure. I don't know what my issue is with it, because you don't seem to have a problem with it. But you've obviously built on those failures, and now you're doing really well. So you run Lender. What is that? What gave you the idea?
Lender, again, another baby that was born out of post-COVID time, when everyone was talking about finances and cost of living. It was really no sexy, wonderful story. And it's pretty cliche for New Zealand, but it really was a few of me and my mates at a social event, probably a barbecue because it's as Kiwi as you get. And we were talking about our mortgages, and we were pretty scared because we all had young families and mortgage rates were just going crazy. They came from like 2% up to, I think, 7% at the absolute worst, which I'm still on a 7% loan. But we all started talking about our finances, which again is not a very Kiwi thing to do, but we did. We probably had a beer and then you start talking. And we all found out that we're getting treated quite differently from the banks. And there was just this broad, different understanding of, did you know that you can get special rates? Did you know that you can move banks within 2 days and go and get a better deal? Did you know about cash contributions? And we all found out that we're getting all these different deals, secret deals or things behind the scenes that you really just don't get unless you ask. And we don't have a culture of just asking or just, you know, trying to negotiate a deal or walk into a retail store and say, is this the best price that you can do on this? We don't have that culture here in New Zealand, but that very much exists overseas. So we thought we've got to fix this. We really have to fix what we're doing when it comes to mortgages. We have to help other people because you just told me what the best deal is that you can get from your bank. So now I'm going to go and ask for it. And then he's going to go and ask for it. And she's going to go and ask for it. And we all landed and got the same deal just by negotiating. So the birth of Lender was born out of that environment where we don't talk about finances enough and everyone gets a different deal and some people don't ask for it. And I think the stats are about 49% of people in New Zealand will actually ask, hey, I want to get a better deal. I know you can do a better interest rate than that. I know you can give me a cash contribution for that. So that was the birth of Lender, and we built a platform where people could see what all the banks were offering, because even that is hard. Even that is hard just to go around several different banks and work out who's got the best one-year fixed rate. So if we could fix that, then we could make life a lot easier without even having to have people go in to their banker and say, I want a better deal than that. And so the other part of that was teaching people, give them an indication on what sort of deals people are getting. So we built a free platform where people could go in and do that.
Yeah. I think that really shows the value as well, where I say this constantly and I think people see it as like a nice to have, but I really see this as like a crucial foundation of doing well with your money is being open and talking to people that you trust. You know, like you might not talk about it to everyone, but you should have some people in your life who you're willing to have these sorts of open conversations with, where you talk to them about money and what's going on. Because just like you guys found out with the mortgage rates, there's this whole hidden economy of things you can benefit from that could be really, really good for you. And it's similar with even things like your job. And you might not realize you could be getting a better pay rate or even perks. Perks can be like not necessarily money, but it could be worth money to you. And if you don't know what other people are getting, you don't know what's possible. It is wild what is out there that you have no idea about. So what do you think are some of the things that people miss when they could be negotiating their mortgage or they could be asking for more? What are some of the things on the table that people maybe don't realize they could be asking about?
I think the first and obvious one is interest rates. So why would you take the rate that people put on their website when you know that 50% of people out there don't get that rate? They get a rate lower than that. And it's not going to be oodles off. You know, you're not going to get 1% when interest rates are 7%, but you might be able to just get that little bit extra. That might be an extra $20 a week.
There's your coffee money,
you know, and have something to enjoy while you're at 7% interest rates. Or you might be able to pay off your mortgage a little bit faster and have your mortgage and own your house outright 1 year earlier by saving that little bit and keeping your repayments the same.
And I'm sorry, 1 year of freedom is amazing. Like if you come to that year, like think about a year of now, if someone said you don't have to pay your mortgage for a year, wouldn't you snatch that up?
Absolutely.
So if it's $20 extra a week that gets you a mortgage free a year earlier, that's amazing. Even if you have to wait a while for it, you're going to want that year when it rolls around.
You will. You will. And it's like that whole group of people that we get obsessed with short-term interest rates in this country, mm-hmm. but it's a different story. But we tend not to think like they do in America, where they're thinking 30-year fixed terms. And I don't know if we ever get there either. Kiwis favour those short-term rates. And that caught a lot of people out during COVID when interest rates skyrocketed. People just fixed for 1 year. Well, why did you fix for 1 year? Well, just because. I always fix for 1 year. Well, you need to think about what's going to happen in life and think a little bit into the future as much as and best as you can. There's interest rates. That's a very obvious one. But you have to think about the future too. Mm-hmm. You know, it is hard. It is hard, particularly for people at the moment, to think about being debt free and not having a mortgage and when they're 65, you know, when right there, now they're in their 40s, it's a hard thing to think about if you're struggling to put food on the table, right?
Yeah.
You just probably don't. The other thing would be cash contributions. So this is a big one that not a lot of people know about, and a lot of banks are campaigning on this at the moment, but it goes through seasonal uplifts when banks want to get more customers and they start talking about, we're going to give you a cash back. There's obviously hooks for that. You need to make sure that you stay with that bank for a period of time in a lot of cases. But that's one thing that people don't know that most banks will offer. And if you're not going to ask for that, then why would they give it to you? Why would a bank just give you cash just because?
Yeah.
So being brave enough to have that conversation and know that lots of other people are having that conversation is a very helpful thing. But there's other benefits as well with having a home loan. Sometimes have your credit card fees waived. You can have your transaction fees waived if some banks are doing that. I hope there's no banks out there charging transaction fees anymore. That's so like 1990s.
You would hope, but yeah.
I bet there's one. Yeah, I bet there's one. But all those things can save you quite a lot of money. And not to mention other things, like you're going to have insurance if you have a mortgage on your house, because if something happens, then the bank's going to want to make sure that you can rebuild the house that they help you buy. Mm. So you can negotiate discounts on those things. There's a whole heap of things. By educating people to be courageous enough to have that conversation, they can save money on a whole lot of other things that they're going to have to pay for in day-to-day life. Like you say, why don't people ask for extra money from their employer? I often hear from people and they go, well, I've been on the salary for 3 years. What, did you think they're just going to randomly have a conversation with you that your boss is thinking, I'm just going to, today, I'm going to go and offer Jackson some extra money just because I feel like it. People have to be courageous enough to go and have those conversations and go,
yeah,
I've been working here for 3 years and you've not spoken to me about this, and open the chat. You know, it's not that scary. What's the worst that could happen? No.
You'll have that feeling where it's in the pit of your stomach and you're a bit like, oh, I don't really want to do this, but I got to do it. And you push through it and you do it anyway. And the reward is on the other side of that feeling. And it's just an icky feeling in your stomach. You know, you got to be brave enough to push through it. I mean, I think the thing as well on what you're mentioning here is this is one of those beautiful moments where, especially if you get a better interest rate or you get some cash back or whatever, it's like when I'm also talking to people about go out and negotiate your power bill. Like, people don't often think about the fact that you can negotiate your power bill. Like, obviously you can cost compare. You can also call up the company and say, hey, your competitor is doing this rate. Will you match it? Now, sometimes they'll say yes. Sometimes they'll say no. Sometimes you end up going to the competitor because they won't. But sometimes they will match it. And the beautiful thing about this is you're making a saving without losing anything. This isn't one of those things where it's like, cut back, give up your coffee, all those things that we don't want to do. You're getting the exact same thing just for a lower price. Same thing with if you pull back on your mortgage interest, if you manage to get a cash back, if you do whatever, you're still getting the same shelter over your head. You're still getting the same stuff just for a lower price. So it's this beautiful situation where you're getting ahead financially without losing any lifestyle. To me, that's the number one first thing you should be targeting with your money. Of course I want more for less. It's a no-brainer. Like, okay, you might feel a bit squicky, but you got to do it, right?
you have to do it. Yeah, because there's so many, like every service provider, you should be able to go and have a conversation. Broadband, mobile phone, you should just be in the habit of doing that. It's sometimes the hardest thing to do because I personally hate 0800 numbers, but you just have to, you know, it could be a 10-minute call that's going to save you loads of money. And all those businesses, you know, it's a free market. They want your business. So be willing to have that conversation with whoever you have your service with. And if they say no, well, you can go somewhere else. You know, it's not the days of telecom where there's only one phone provider in this entire country. You have options these days. And you should get in the cycle, especially when you have fixed terms of things, diarize it in your phone that you're coming off your broadband fixed term, diarize that you're coming off your mobile fixed term and mortgage and all those things and get ahead of that conversation early so that you're not actually rushed, because with mortgages, people rush. Oh, my mortgage has come off today. I have to sort it because now I'm on this floating rate, which is, you know, 6% when I could be on this. And then people rush into decisions and get bad advice or no advice at all, which is probably the worst advice. Yeah. And then you get locked into something that you actually probably could have gone somewhere else and got a better deal.
Yes. Oh, I love that. That's a really good one. And yeah, I also have the notifications in my phone. I even have just a standard, it's been a year, go through and check all of the bills I have. This is just in my phone. Every year it pops up and says, time to go through all your bills. And I'll pick one per week, because you don't want to overload yourself. We're all very busy. But pick one per week and go and like check if there's a better deal out there. Get in touch with them and say, can you give me a better deal? And just yearly little checkup on these things. It's so important. How do you find, you mentioned earlier in our conversation that it can be hard even finding the information to compare, you know, the 1 year fixed rate, never mind all the other little perks and cashbacks that you could be getting from the banks. And I think that is sometimes where people get stuck. They get stuck in the information overwhelm. They get stuck in trying to figure it out. So where do you go to dig that information out and sort of pull it together?
Because it's 2025, you know, we live in this wonderful internet world. A lot of that information is available through APIs and open banking. You know, open banking's, because of where banking is with information sharing, all that information can be pulled in and summarized in nice, easy views for people to read. So that's exactly what Lender does. It goes out and searches the world of mortgages, and then it comes back with what are the interest rates that are happening. What are the promos that are happening right now in the New Zealand mortgage market? Banks are sharing more information now more than ever. And with open banking upping its game, because there's, you know, all these new hurdles of information that banks have to share because of the open banking legislation, there'll be more and more things. There'll be more and more lenders, hopefully. There'll be more things that are built to compare things really easily, so that you don't have to sit there and get out your little notebook and review everyone's websites and review all the special terms of all these different interest rates. It's just so confusing because people are not getting mortgages every single day. I'm lucky. I've worked with mortgages, you know, for over a decade. So I've seen a lot of people enter into mortgages and have a lot of discussions about mortgages. But some people are doing that like twice in their life. And
yeah.
And if you're not the person in your household who's interested in mortgages, then it could be never. But yeah, it's simply because of the world that we live in now, where technology's at, we can grab that information and summarize it. And then we also use to get discounting information and promos. We rely a lot on people using the platform as well and sharing what they're getting and proving that they're actually getting that, because if someone said I got 1%, then lender's not going to believe them. So there's that kind of communal element to lender as well. We rely a lot on our users to tell us about what mortgage rate they're getting. And because we're Kiwis, we want to help other Kiwis get a better mortgage, and we want to help our fellow Kiwi save money on various things. So we're just lucky that people do that. There's no incentive other than helping someone else save money. And why wouldn't you do that? It would take you like a second. A lot of lender features that have been released and will be released into the future is simply based on what the crowd says they need. Crowd said they wanted it to be easier to find mortgage advice because a lot of people got pretty average mortgage advice or just decided to use an online system to lock their mortgage in for a period of time, which meant when mortgage rates went up, they were stuck in terms that they didn't love, you know, because they came off and then their mortgage rates blown out by 50% because they just didn't get advice. So people wanted it to be easier to find mortgage advisors. So we built that. You know, Lender's had its own things as well. There's been things that Lender was this huge complex tool when we first built it, but that had a login tool and all this kind of stuff. But we tend to listen to our users, and our users said they didn't use the login feature in this wonderful dashboard that we built for them. So we turned it off. It's still there. It's still in the back, but that was one thing that, you know, to speak about failures, that was one thing that we got wrong when we first built Lender. Lender is successful, yes, but there's things, there's little trip-ups that happen along the way to get to where you're going. And we got all excited and built all these wonderful things that we thought people would absolutely love. And people didn't love it. They just wanted a better deal on their mortgage, like as fast as possible. They want the information now, you know, not answer 20 questions, create a login, you know, all these wonderful unnecessary things that I thought were really cool. They want to know what mortgage rates are out there, like real quick, because I've got no time.
It's just something I've had to learn as well, that it's like sometimes when I feel like I'm giving so much value that I'm like, I worked really hard on this and this is amazing. You are welcome. And people are like, eh, I need like 10% of that. And I'm like, well, cool. I wasted all my time. Neat. But you know, sometimes you can really put yourself through the ringer trying to give people extra value, and that's not what they want at all. And
that's right.
It's the really key thing of listening to people, hopefully before you put in all the time and effort. Like, talk to them before is what I am learning in business.
Ask and listen, properly listen. But again, it's just, you know, with tall poppy syndrome and with people not being able to talk about their failures, we just so want to get it right. Yeah. You know, everyone just wants to do a really good job and try and read people's minds.
And feel like you're giving heaps to people. Like, I do think actually a lot of people are trying to give more. And yet you got to make sure it's a gift that is wanted.
Yes. And you only find out by asking. Yeah. Hopefully before you've spent 2 weeks on it or 2 years.
Yes, definitely that one.
Life is full of ups and downs, so no matter what your everyday looks like, KiwiBank has the products and services to help you manage your money your way. To find out more, head to kiwibank.co.nz. This is making Kiwi better off. This is KiwiBank.
I think as well, you know, you kind of mentioned there about, you know, some of the other areas of people's financial lives. I'd like to talk about that too, because you obviously you're deep in the mortgage world now, but you've bounced around the financial world in general quite a bit because you were in banking as well. Now, obviously there's Lender. You've got business advisory roles. So quite a broad range of experience there. That sounds really fun to me. Sorry, I'm revealing myself as a nerd. That does sound fun. It's given you quite a window, I expect, on people's overall money lives. So is there something you see a lot of people get wrong? And how would you say we should fix it?
When it comes to money, you want to be getting a broad range of opinions. Sometimes we go, oh, well, I'll just call mum and see what she says about this. But mum is not always going to be right. You know, mum's going to tell you what...
We love mum, but...
we love mum, but she's probably going to tell you what she did. And mum might have done very well, but mum did that back when things were very different. So yeah, a broad range of view on things is really important when you're working with money, and ideally getting professional advice when you're working with money is really important. But when it comes to money, for me, I am a bit of a Scrooge. I'm a bit of a spender, but I'm also a bit of a Scrooge. I want to spend money on good quality T-shirts that are going to last, you know, like, because sometimes you go to these stores and you put it in the wash and then the whole seam's like twisted around going around the other way, or it's...
That literally just happened to me and it made me so angry. It's so funny that you specifically mentioned T-shirts. It made me so mad.
I find that's always a good one because you can buy $10 T-shirts, but if you're going to buy $10 T-shirts, and some people have to buy $10 T-shirts, that's cool, and that you work with that, but realistically, there's nothing good that comes out of buying $10, you know, $5, $10 T-shirts when you could buy a really good quality one for $50 that might just last, you know, 2 years, rather than 5 T-shirts that are only going to last about 3 months, depending on how intense your washing machine is. If you've got one of those old school ones that sing the national anthem, it's going to probably rip it apart, you know, and you're going to land at the end of 2025 having bought 25 T-shirts. And there was someone who I worked for about 10 years ago told me about that, because I was buying $10 T-shirts. And he said, you've got to be thinking about, when it comes to money, and he had worked in banking his whole life, you need to think about the average spend that you're spending on the things that you buy all the time.
Yes.
So you need to be thinking about all those T-shirts that you bought. If you bought 50 $10 T-shirts last year and you only have 2 of them left, well, you surely could buy some better quality T-shirts than that that would last more than a year. And that comes into... You know, just that whole disposable thing that we get into. We got to get back to making our own things in some cases. I did a post on social media a little while ago about making your own laundry detergent to save money. But there's all those little things that you can do in your life that were just so in this routine of not doing and not thinking about. Because living can be really expensive. And we've seen that over the last 5 years. So think of all the things that you're spending money on all the time and think how you can cut back on it. You mentioned looking at your bank statements and seeing what money is going on.
Mm-hmm.
I went through my bank statements and found out that I'm paying a subscription, I think twice for one subscription service.
Oh no.
Because I thought I'd be cheeky and be a Scrooge like I am and set up with a different email account, but they hook you in, they ask for a credit card, and you end up paying 2 subscriptions. So
they caught you. You thought you were being cheeky. They were cheeky.
Got me. They got me and they made me sign all those terms and conditions as well. But you do have to get in that habit of reviewing that, and it can be quite confronting, as you say, but do it often in small chunks and you'll find those little gems that will save you money, because lifestyle creep is a real thing. And I've spoken that about that recently. As you start earning more money, as you get courageous enough to go to your boss and say, I want to know why I haven't received a pay rise in 3 years when everything has gone up by 20%.
Mm.
Can we talk about why? Once you get that pay rise, a lot of people just start spending more money and they start buying all those little things. I can afford to buy an extra T-shirt, or I can afford to buy a more premium product, and they find themselves no better off because you get lifestyle creep and you start spending the same amount of your income. You know, so if you're spending 60% of your income on living, lifestyle creep will make sure, unchecked, that you keep doing that.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And I think as well, like you say, sometimes people are really on the bones of their butt and they have no option other than to go for the cheapest. But I think actually many times that's not the situation. Many times it is that we want to buy 5 of the cheap things when you could buy 1 good thing. And if that's the situation you're in, it is really worth thinking about things like good old Victoria Beckham, who introduced this phrase to me, cost per wear. And it has totally changed how I think about things. If I'm going to wear something a lot and get a lot of use out of it, yes, I want a good version of it that might cost me a little bit more. The trick being that price doesn't always equal quality, but that's a whole nother conversation. I think it's a really good point to make in a general sense. What about areas that we get right? Is there sort of an underrated skill that you think people do quite well with that maybe we should all be a bit prouder of if we're doing something like that?
I would say we're pretty resilient as a country. We are such a resilient people because we're so far away from everything. We should celebrate how resilient we are when it comes to money and survival and making ends meet.
Mm.
people just don't second guess cutting back on expenses. And we see a lot of people talk about it on social media now, which is a really positive thing. It's a really positive first step, is to talk about, I can't afford to do this anymore. I can't afford to go out for this dinner anymore because things cost so much. That things cost 20% more than they did 3 years ago, or I've had a baby. I think in our hearts, we're actually a very communal country. And I know sometimes it doesn't feel like it with what's going on around the world, or someone doesn't like what someone says, but we are really communal. You know, people will rally together at the end of the day, but and be resilient through the tough times. But I think when it comes down to it, we have a community spirit. We want to help other people, want to help other people save money. We're talking about it now. People do it through Lender. People tell people how much they're saving on their mortgage. People tell people how much cash they're getting from their banks and whatnot. We, in our hearts, actually want to help other people. I think that's what it means to be a New Zealander, what it means to be a Kiwi, and we get that part so right. We want to help each other. And we're really good at just hanging in there. You know, what do they say? What do the finance bros say? Is it hodl or something?
Yeah,
hold on for dear life. And we're just so good at that in this country. And I worked in banking, as you said. I started in banking around the global financial crisis, and I saw.
Oh wow! What a time to start.
I know. What a time to learn, and I learned loads. But I saw that people were pretty resilient and could cut back on things and be agile and create new things and probably stop doing this until we have more money. But we're pretty savvy. We're pretty savvy people when it comes to money. You know, with all the negative news about it that we sometimes see, we're pretty savvy when it comes to money in this country. And I think it's down to those two things.
Well, speaking of the sort of communal aspect of things, I think you're spot on that front. And the other side of it, of course, Lender is actually part of what's called the Māori economy. And I'd love to talk about that a bit more. Take me through that. What is the Māori economy?
Yeah, so the Māori economy, we're seeing it spoken about a whole lot more. And Lender is part of that because I'm obviously why I'm here. I'm part of Lender and I am Māori. I whakapapa to this country. My ancestors are from this land, or the first people to come to this land. In this country, we have always had a Māori economy way back in the day before, you know, some of my ancestors started coming here from Scotland and Ireland and whatnot. My other ancestors were trading with one another, trading greenstone, which we all wear on our necks. A lot of people do, trading greenstone from down south for, you know, fish for hapu and iwi who lived on the coastlines, for example. So the Māori economy has always been here. It is basically an economy that is valued at about $126 billion right now. And the more that grows, the more people will talk about it, the more willing news outlets will be to talk about it as well. Broadly speaking, what is the Māori economy? The majority of it is businesses like Lender, who are privately owned entities that are owned by people who are Māori, that own private businesses that employ people. So that would be pretty much a majority of the Māori economy. Māori-owned law firms, accountancy firms, manufacturers, builders, drain layers, plumbers, all those wonderful things. They are the rock stars of the Māori economy. And in the economy in general, all those people are a big part of the economy of this country, not even talking about the Māori economy. So when we talk about $126 billion worth of asset value, it is those people. It's those people that created those businesses who have probably had failures and have probably had wins. It is the value of those businesses. And then you also get Māori collectives, which make up a portion of the Māori economy as well. So that's your iwi, that's your Ngāi Tahu, Tainui, who Tainui were in the news just recently doing a big infrastructure project over in Waikato. So those iwi and hapu ventures make up a portion of that economy as well. Mm. But broadly speaking, it's those SMEs, those small to medium enterprises. That is the Māori economy. We need to celebrate that it is still here through all that's gone on over hundreds of years, which is all behind many of us now, but it is still here and it's growing again. It went through a period, you know, hundreds of years ago where it shrunk because Māori were massive, back to Levin, maybe this is where it comes from, massive market gardeners, you know, were growing produce here and trading it when people came to the country back in the day. A lot of settlers who came here, who were welcomed here, were fed by the Māori economy segment of horticulturalists who were growing kumara, yams and all those things and fixing scurvy, I think, with some other vegetable. But they were feeding the people who were here and they were selling their produce to the early people who came here to New Zealand. That is the Māori economy, broadly speaking, and it is part of the economy. You know, it's not a separate economy. It is part of the economy.
How involved are you with the Māori economy and why is it important to you?
It's important to me because I see so much potential in it. It has grown fast and it's part of the overall economy, not to be forgotten, but it has grown at a pace much faster than the rest of the economy. And I just see potential in that for the wider country. There must be learnings in the Māori economy that can be transferred into other parts of the economy to share that success. So I just see a huge opportunity in taking the learnings that happen there and helping the whole economy grow.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it feeds into that broader point we were talking about before about in both money and business, I think people can sometimes feel like they need to be an island. And yet we see so many times over and over again what actually works is the network, helping each other out, pitching in. What do you think makes businesses in the Māori economy different? And how does that network of banding together and recognizing this is the Māori economy and working together, how does that network help things?
Yeah. So through my other roles that I do, because I wear many other hats, I do work with the Māori economy in the lower North Island doing business advisory. So I get to see through that role of economic growth, I get to see these businesses and what they're like and get under the hood. Coming from banking, you learn a lot about business, but working in advisory and people taking you through their yard and showing you their product that they've spent their whole life on, you get to learn about what is different and the mechanics of how things work. And without saying specific businesses, yes, the owners, potentially one of the owners will be Māori, but I think where these organisations go right, which is they build certain tikanga or rules or Māori values into the way that they do business. So we know that kaitiaki tanga or being sustainable and looking after the land, because ultimately it's pretty sad to talk about, but it'll be our grandkids and our great grandkids who will be on this land one day. And what good is it if it's deserted dust land that's not being looked after? So kaitiaki tanga is a value that I see business owners have, and they're thinking about not right now. Yes, it's good if we can make a business and make loads of money this year and pay people their 20% pay rise because no one asked for 3 years. They are thinking about the long term. They want a business to be there because they instill these Māori values into their organisations to think about, I want this to be here for my grandkids. I'm thinking about the future. I don't just want to have a massive bonus at the end of this year and not think about all the successive years that are going to come down the track. And the way that some contractors, Māori contractors, and I'm not saying that they all do this because there'll be some that don't, but some that I have seen who are award-winning are looking after the environment that they work in. So when it comes to forestry or fisheries, or farming, some of those principles of kaitiakitanga means that they're applying those sustainable practices into their business and are looking after the land and looking after the community and are deliberately making sure that when they leave an environment, that it is somewhat represented environment of what it was before they were there. So, and that's not to say everyone else isn't doing sustainability, but those are Māori values that have been shared over generation after generation. Also in hospitality, for example, so manaakitanga, or to manaaki someone is to be respectful, be trustworthy, look after people, make them feel like a guest. And some hospitality businesses that I see intentionally showcasing that they're Māori owned and have Māori style menus and stuff, you notice that warmness and that friendliness that comes out through manaakitanga. So it's that value that they must have instilled into their organisational values that people can see and people love there.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I mean, it's funny because you and I first saw each other's work on, or at least I saw your work, and we've talked a bit over social media. I find your posts really interesting, and you talk about all sorts of parts of the money world, but including the Māori economy, which is great for me. I can be scrolling, I can learn something about a part of the world that I'm otherwise not really involved in. So it's fantastic. But of course, social media can be a little bit crazy. You get the pros and the cons. Do you ever have people saying negative things to you on these topics? Like, are there any criticisms or comments on this that you would like to take the chance to rebut?
I do get some negative commentary being on social media. I think it comes with no matter what you talk about. You could talk about eyelashes or something, and someone is going to say something.
There are just huge eyelash scandals. Don't start me. If you're on beauty TikTok, my God.
Especially with all that's going on, to talk about something like the Māori economy, it is different, right? It's right for people to question things. 10 years ago, plus when I didn't even know that it was a thing that was measured by the government and reported on by the government, it's right to ask questions. And sometimes you get some pretty feral questions out there, but they are, if you boil them down, you can use them to help educate people on the topic that is being asked. Some of them are just out the gate, and I think social media will actually block those. But some of them are things that people wouldn't normally ask in a public setting. And that's one good thing about social media. People don't have to have a profile picture. They don't have to have their name there, although I do, and sometimes I regret it. But people can be courageous in their blank profiles and ask the questions that probably other people are thinking about. And then you can answer that question. And through doing that, you can learn. There's a lot that can be learned through conversing with one another. I probably wouldn't rebut anything here because I just rebut it on social media anyway.
A beautifully positive way of taking it, of like, okay, yeah, they're taking the chance to say things that people don't normally say, but we're getting the chance to bring this conversation out of the shadows. I need to work on that perspective a little bit. I think that's a really beautiful way of looking at it.
And I think it just comes from, you know, and I've been talking about it a lot, being courageous enough to have conversations about certain things. And we have to be courageous enough to actually have conversations. I think there's nothing worse, and we've probably all experienced it from time to time, is having potentially a bit of a heated discussion with someone and then it results in silent treatment for a couple of days. And I hate that.
I hate that so much. So
much of a talker. Nothing's solved out of someone walking away. There's so much lost opportunity out of people not rebutting each other and having decent, respectful conversations with each other. And I don't always get it right, but I don't often get angry. But rebutting people and having a conversation, there's so much to be learned from it. And we just understand each other a whole lot more. And you're hopefully courageous enough to go and ask for a discount from your bank and your insurance company and your power company and your phone company.
Exactly. Share all these beautiful things. And on that, I mean, we're pretty much out of time. But if someone is trying to get ahead in life, especially with their money, I mean, that's probably why they're listening to this podcast. So if there's just one thing that someone takes from this conversation or one thing that someone does, what would you like that to be? What's the big thing you think that people should do to get ahead with their money?
My biggest piece of advice would be to negotiate and don't just take what you're given. Because sometimes if you ask again, you know, that could be the difference between saving yourself $50 a week or maybe having a different decision on an insurance claim or something like that. If you don't push back and ask again, then you're just going to completely miss that opportunity to save money. So don't just accept what you're given. Go back and ask again if you're not happy with it. If you're not happy with no for your pay rise or their response for that, then ask again. And hopefully in doing that, even if it's a no, you might understand better why it's a no and be willing to accept it a little bit more.
I love this. I feel like the underlying theme of this entire conversation with you and maybe a bit of your philosophy is this idea of courageous conversations, whether it's in your money life or just regular life. The courageous conversations, I think, is really something that I'm taking from this conversation, which is fantastic. Or if someone wants more courageous conversations, potentially with you, where can everyone find you?
You can find me on TikTok, jackson.nz, if you want to have a conversation and see me rebut people. You can find me on LinkedIn, Jackson Harpeter, or you can find me in my profile in the wonderful tool that we've built at lender.nz. You can find me there as well. So a couple of options.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. Jackson Harpeter, co-founder of Lender. And I loved this conversation. Look, if you have feedback on it, questions about it, or really questions anything to do with money, come and find me online because I love to include your questions in future podcast episodes. Make sure that we are answering the things that you want to know. So Francis Cook NZ, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, also heaps more money content on there for you. But most importantly, make sure you subscribe to Making Sense wherever you're listening to this. We're YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the usual places. And that makes sure you never miss the tips and tricks that make a difference for your money. Until next time, have a great day.
Just a note before you go. This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most cases. It's not individual financial advice. We're all different, so some of this might not apply to your specific situation. Take what works for you, ignore the rest. If you're after individual financial advice, a financial advisor is always the best bet.